If you were looking to maximize your productivity, to use these new AI-based tools in a way that genuinely gives you that 5x improvement of your capabilities, then this is the episode for you. These are the 5 ways I'm using AI more than any other to maximize my output. I'm Guy Swan, and this is AI Unchained. What is up, guys? Welcome back to AI Unchained. I am Guy Swan, your host, and this is the place where we are going through my journey into the AI space, and we are breaking down not only the self-hosted and open source tools, but just the ways that we can integrate these tools into our lives, because I think things are moving so fast that we are going to be in a constant game of catch-up. We're going to see 2 new iterations of the technology while we're still working on the first iteration of how to make best use of these tools. And like I said, this is largely my journey going through this, because I was only really introduced to this space back when, this time last year, so like kind of November of last year, when OpenAI released their ChatGPT publicly, and just kind of opened everyone's eyes to how powerful these tools had become, and specifically me. I had never paid much attention to it at all. And so largely this show is my journey. I've just kind of barreled down the rabbit hole after that in how to make best use of these tools. And so this is largely my journey that I'm trying to document as I figure these things out. In today's episode, we are going through the 5 highest value ways that I am currently using AI tools. And largely, I'm using ChatGPT for my main LLM. Not the GPT-4all, which is the one that I have local hosted, is not a great option, but I'm having problems with context length because I want to put a ton of data into it. And ChatGPT lets me put in pages and pages and pages of stuff to make sense of and summarize and that sort of thing. So I've been leaning a lot on ChatGPT, and for the most part, a lot of the things I use it for aren't really like privacy concerns anyway. So I think kind of the marriage until we get to another era of like where we have hardware that's extremely specific for AI, and then we have tools like Mojo, like the new software language that is going to be like probably a 10x improvement on efficiency in running a lot of these pieces of software. Until we kind of have another few iterations, I think it's the best balance right now will be leveraging the really large models like ChatGPT and ChatGPT-4 specifically, and marrying that with the local models. Because it's really great to work local models into kind of automated systems like GPT-4all, or more specifically, Prim AI. Prim AI is a really great tool, which we're actually going to go over in a video series far more in depth on how I build a lot of these things that I talk about in today's episode. This will be kind of a general overview of the things that we use. PrimAI.io is the website if you want to dig a little bit deeper into it and kind of get a head start and start playing around with it. It works really well on Mac, like really fast and simple double-click install, whereas on Linux, it's a little bit trickier, and I'm going to be doing a video on just getting it running and what and how to use it specifically. All right, so number one is troubleshooting. Now, this one might seem obvious in a sense, but I want to stress how incredibly valuable this is and to not forget that it is there, because there's a lot of times where I think, oh, obviously this would be a great troubleshooting opportunity for ChatGPT. And then there are other cases where I somehow it doesn't show up in my mental flow that, oh, I should go to GPT for this. But then it turns out to be an incredibly useful tool for exactly that. So the way I think about this is, imagine you have a person with just general knowledge of every possible topic at your disposal at any time. Doesn't mean you're going to get 100% accurate information. And, you know, like, let's say you have somebody who comes to repair your AC, right? Is they're not going to be like an absolute expert, but they're going to have extremely good general knowledge about the tools and about the system that they're working on, such that they can answer a lot of basic questions. and get you to kind of understand the big picture. This is where the LLMs really excel. And one of the best ones I have found for a local run is Llama 2. But ChatGPT is great for this as well, just because you can get it in app form. So you can get it on your phone, your iPad, your laptop, you know, all of your devices can use ChatGPT. Whereas right now I'm working on finding a solution for that for myself hosted to be able to use my AI machine, but I'm just not there quite yet. Now there's another thing that I think a lot of people have this mindset, and I at least say that because of the responses that I've got when I've talked to people about this, and then also the way I originally used it. People forget that ChatGPT or these LLMs can also read really, really fast. And again, this is where I was talking about the context length, is that ChatGPT is superior than most of the local hosted. Granted, I may have found a model that changes that. We will see. That will be something to keep an eye on. So subscribe and stay tuned if you want to see me explore that and see how much I can cram into a model on my own computer with the 3090. But the best thing about troubleshooting with an LLM is that you can give it the information that you find. For like a great example is one of the ones that I used recently was Prim. So I said that it's a little bit tricky on Linux to get Prim running. Well, it's brand new. Like the Linux version I don't even think there's any issues on GitHub. There's no like Stack Exchange answers and questions. Like so few people have run this that there's practically nothing on the internet about it. And I started using it practically right when it was launching, and they just released an open source book, which we will be going over at some point on this show, and it's breaking down the sort of state of the art in open source AI. But right now, I am just slowly getting through that book. I'll have the link in the show notes for that, though, if you want to check it out ahead of me. So back to it. LLMs read really fast. So this is where, going back to my issue that I had with Prim, so I had no resources available, and then of course, because nothing was published online, it was new, ChatGPT also had no resources or knowledge about Prim. But you know what Prim does have? Documents. Documentation. And so I literally just went to their GitHub, copied and pasted their README, went through all of their documentation, copy and pasted, and then walked through what I was doing in my terminal window and copy and pasted all of that into ChatGPT and just kept saying, I want you to read this and just take it into account, and I'm going to feed you some more data, so just wait. And I just kept doing this over and over with ChatGPT to feed it all of the things and then just ask what it thought the problem was and why it wasn't running and what steps I needed to take to actually solve the wall I was running into. And it gave me basically a couple of ideas of what to try the first couple of times. And I tried a couple of them. One of them seemed to get me to the next step. I gave it the new output and said, this is the update. This is the new error. This is the new thing. And then it said, oh, well, this seems to clearly be because you don't have this version of PyTorch or whatever it was. That wasn't what it was, but it was something like that. There was just a different tool that needed to be updated or a version of it that I needed on my computer. And then after like two or three rounds of this kind of back and forth, Prim AI was running on my Linux machine. So I want to reiterate the situation because this is something I am an avid tester of new software, of beta and alpha software like crazy, especially anything that I think is going to be insanely useful or has a very unique kind of platform or place in kind of a software stack, and then all protocol-based things, all Bitcoin apps, all cypherpunk privacy peer-to-peer apps. Like I have been doing this for 20 years, arguably, just constantly updating and installing things that aren't ready for production. And I cannot tell you how many times I have just run into a wall that I could not get past. And this is one of those times where I didn't have any resources. I didn't have anyone to go to solve this problem. And ChatGPT had no prior knowledge as to what this tool was or how to work with it. And just by feeding it the information that I could find, which it could make a better assessment of, and giving it my terminal window output, it was able to guide me through the bottlenecks to the point that I had it up and running. And what's funny is even just booting PrimAI is like a little bit confusing. It's not straightforward. Like, it's not like I can just like double click on Prim in my apps and run it. It's all basically I have to run it from terminal with my like from the folder that I installed it with. And so I can use AI. I can use ChatGPT or, you know, Replit or any of the code-based ChatGPT sort of things, the LLMs, in order to build a simple desktop app, like a simple like double-click script that I can have executable, and I can give it the Prim icon that will basically boot it, do all of those processes. Like, if it's like a three-step process that I keep forgetting what those three steps are, I can just automate it. I can build it into a small double-click script, and then I can just have it in my list of apps and double-click on it to run it whenever I need to. Now, there's another really interesting way that LLMs help in this troubleshooting endeavor, is because have you ever found something on Stack Exchange or Stack Overflow forum, anything, and you read the answer and everybody's like thumbs up and everybody's responding, yeah, this is the one that you need, but you read it and it reads something like, all you have to do is merge the continuum transfunctioner with the compiling engine, but you have to be sure to transpose from Git before you do it, because if you don't have enough configuration tokens, you might brick your computer. But really, it's that simple. All you have to do is those two steps and it'll all work fine. This has actually happened more times than I would like to admit, that I cannot understand the answer any better than I can understand the problem that I'm having. But you know what's really great at dumbing stuff down for when you feel like an idiot? LLMs. This is another great element to the fact that LLMs can read faster and better. It has better context than you do. Now, this is not always the case because, you know, for example, is I'm not going to go to an LLM to answer questions about Bitcoin because I'm going to have a far more in-depth and accurate knowledge, I think, than something like ChatGPT would on general explanations and understandings of how and why Bitcoin works. But that's specifically because it's my speciality. So what I said at the beginning was that, you know, having these LLMs, having ChatGPT is like having someone who has general or maybe better than just above average knowledge or familiarity with everything. Well, that means if you're an expert on something, you're probably going to be better than ChatGPT is. But here's the thing, is that the overwhelming majority of all the things that we do, we're completely ignorant of. Nobody's an expert in everything. So having that sort of median knowledge reference to bounce ideas off of, just to understand the jargon or the terminology. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've used it in trying to make sense of how I might go about something, but I just don't know the terms. You know, I don't know what to search for. For instance, the mining at home. As I have a Bitcoin miner that is heating my home, and I was trying to figure out how to make a switch. What I was thinking in my mind was a relay for its power, so that if a thermostat measured that something was out of whack or there was some other sensor that triggered, well, then this would basically send a signal to a relay or disconnect power from a relay that would shut off the power to the line for the miner, so that the miner was basically emergency shut off in any sort of situation where something unexpected happened. And when I went searching for it, I could not find what I was looking for. Relay simply wasn't the right word. And so I asked ChatGPT how I might do this setup, and I gave it kind of like the bullet points and the details of what I needed. And apparently the name of the thing that I was specifically looking for was called a contactor. That saved me a lot of time in trying to find that, because no matter how many times I searched it, it was never coming up with contactor as a product. But then turns out that is exactly what I needed. So those are just a couple of areas where I think the troubleshooting might not be completely obvious, and that if you just went to ChatGPT and you were like, how do I install Prim, it wouldn't give you anything, and then you might just kind of give up and be like, okay, well, I'll go search Google. And I think it's just important to remember the different ways we can actually utilize this, because it doesn't need to have any prior knowledge in order for it to make use of a bunch of tools and information that is already out there, because you can just give it to it. All right. Now, number two is tutorials. This is my next major one, and this is one of those ones that I think from a collective context, this could be one of the most valuable ways that we utilize AI, from being able to access information that other people have, access solutions to problems that other people have had, that for so long have basically not made their way online. So, what do I mean by this? One of the greatest values of the internet is the sheer amount of information and other people that you are connected to that may be having the same problem or trying to utilize the same tool that you are, so that information is out there for other people to sort through their problems. If only one other person has the same issue that you are having or thinks about it from the same perspective and you can find them, then you can manage to solve your problem or get access to the information that they have that you were missing that helps you sort out how to tackle some sort of issue in your life or in some tool or software, etc. I think LLMs in particular, ChatGPT-like AI, can actually 10x this use case in two different ways. There are two different ways that I think this is going to be an order of magnitude improvement over what we currently have access to on the internet. So first is, just like the example with Prim, is that it can help you troubleshoot through things without the information actually being on there, without someone else actually having solved this problem. Is that I was able to troubleshoot something that I'm about 99% sure would have just been a brick wall that took too long to solve, to the point that I just had to move on to a different project or go on to something. Like, maybe I would have been able to solve it by myself. But the thing is it probably would have taken me 5 hours, maybe multiple days, to try to beat my head against it for long enough that I actually came to a conclusion. Whereas just a few iterations with ChatGPT, I found the answer. So going back to the example of like my having used tons and tons of different software where I just kind of ran into a bottleneck and did not have the time to unravel the issue and find my way to a solution, I think I am 100% going to be able to basically 10x my ability to utilize or solve problems in software like that than previously. That I'm going to have a lot less walls that I can't just easily hop over thanks to these tools. But I think it is also going to 10x the amount of that information that makes it online. And here's why. I would bet right now that for the number of people who document where and how a lot of their software goes wrong or the problems and solutions that they sort out, that an insanely small percentage actually makes it published online for people to find it in the public. Like, it would not surprise me at all if every single time I found one post that had a specific problem and a specific answer that was solved, that there were probably like 500 people who had that exact same problem that never posted online to ask. They just got annoyed and gave up, or they solved it and never posted the solution anywhere. I would bet it's probably 0.1% of the scope. And you know, it's funny, you see it a lot just in how you, like what you see on like a forum is somebody will post some sort of a solution or problem. There won't be any post for it anywhere. Like, this is something that I've had a lot where I'll go to a forum or I'll go to one of these websites that's trying to document Q&A for whatever tool I'm using. And I'll just search and search and search and I won't find anything. And then finally, I'll just post my question, and then there's like 50 comments, like within like a week after I posted it, of people going like, yeah, I'm having that same problem, actually. I've been trying to figure out why that is happening. And those are the extroverts that are just finally encouraged to post because they found someone talking about the issue. Now think about all the introverts that are out there that will do neither, but would actually have huge benefit from seeing that conversation public and having the discussion or the solution being posted. So going back to one of the problems that I had that I used ChatGPT to troubleshoot my way out of, and this time it was with Stable Diffusion. It was with, I believe it was Comfy UI, which is a user interface for Stable Diffusion, which is an image generation model. And I was trying to do an install of some custom nodes, and I just kept running into just errors in the terminal. And I could not find anything related to exactly this specific error. So I did the same thing that I usually do. I copied and pasted the terminal. I went through docs and instructions of how to install the custom node because the instructions that I found weren't correct, or they didn't account for whatever issue I was having. 3 to 4 iterations later, figured out what it was, installed the missing pieces, and voila, all the custom nodes were working. Now, when I find problems like this, almost invariably, I save a lot of the relevant information, and I say to myself, oh man, I need to take some time in the next couple of days to write up a tutorial so that if anybody else has this problem, I can publish it online, and they can figure out, they won't run into the same issue, right? The solution will be out there. The problem with that is I never have the time to do those things, ever. And I'll tell you, outside of, you know, some forum posts or whatever, I probably post 1 out of 100, maybe, for what I actually figure out versus just get distracted and go on and then forget even exactly what I did. Because, like, you know, when you do a tutorial or whatever, you have to go back through and repeat the process. So I have to, like, figure out how to recreate the problem so I could show them what I did, or I have to record a bunch of video and then go back through and edit it. And it's just, like, it's frustrating. It's a lot of work. So if it doesn't feel, like, super related to some of the things that I'm doing, and this is largely why I actually started AI Unchained, is because I knew I was going to run into this a lot, and I needed an avenue to actually get this out to feel like it made sense to publish, and it was beneficial to me as well. So I had this problem with the custom nodes on Stable Diffusion or on Comfy UI, and I did that same thing. I was like, oh, I'll do this tomorrow or in a few days, and I'll put all this information together and make a tutorial for it. And then I stopped, and it struck me. And I was like, wait a second. All of this is just a ChatGPT conversation. I've given it my terminal output. It already has all of this information in the context of the conversation that I am in right now. And I just said to it, I just said, can you write this up as succinctly as possible into like 5 or 6 steps to identify the problem, see what they will have, because it was going to be kind of a generic error and it might even have a different module or a different like program that they don't have installed, just to identify where to identify what exactly it is that they need to fix or need to install or update. Break this down, separate out, like with, you know, a code quotation, the relevant commands and outputs that they would see in the terminal, and just make this like a simple tutorial, like a one-pager tutorial for anybody who solves, or for anybody who runs into this problem. And he said, sure, I can do that. And it was just like, just spit it all out. I was done. I don't have to postpone till tomorrow. Nothing. It just gave me, I used it to troubleshoot, and it immediately had every piece of information it needed to turn that into a tutorial that I could turn right around and post online. Now, what's funny is that I still haven't posted it online. But like 90% of the work is done. And I will say that there's one last step that I highly encourage. I desperately encourage you to do this with all of your issues, especially the ones that you use ChatGPT to troubleshoot with, because it is, I mean, talk about low barrier. I mean, the ease of just turning that into a set of instructions is insane. But there is one thing that I ask of you, and it is, that on the last thing, and this is something that I have already done, and really I was just looking for a place to publish it, because it feels weird to like post it on Noster. or something. And like, so I'm looking for just a, and maybe I just need to start a Medium page of like AI Unchained things and troubleshooting, or just go to Stack Overflow, whatever it is. I just need to find a place, a good place to publish, so that it doesn't get lost in the mix or, you know, deleted. It just, it lives in a place where troubleshooters typically go to find solutions. But the one thing that I did and that I think everybody should do is to read through it and fix the language. When this thing gave me a tutorial, it was extremely boilerplate, practically like a middle school book report sort of language. Like, welcome to your tutorial for solving Comfy UI custom node issue. You are probably running into this and you have seen this command. Like, it was just, it was not the right language, right? It was just, it was the median language of what you might find for a sort of tutorial or report. And it was, it sounded a lot like it was written by a bot. So what did I do? I just cleaned it up. So it just sounded like me. Every time that I kind of wanted to cringe when I was reading the paragraph, I just edited it to say like, all right, if you run into this Comfy UI problem and you get this error, this is where you probably need to start looking for a solution. Here's what I had in mind, blah, blah, blah. But there's two important reasons why you should do this step. One is because it's bad to read a boring tutorial, but two, because eventually this is going to be a massive amount of data on the internet, and it's going to be used to train an AI. Now, there's always an element of, well, you know, this is accurate information, and you have curated the data and the tutorial itself to make sure that it's actually positive. Like, it's genuine, useful information to train an LLM on, but we don't want LLMs to be trained on LLM output language. So I think it's actually important for the sake of the future training and data sets to not just be more accurate and have more context for all of it, which that tutorial would be great for, because now it can be trained on an explicit tutorial to solve something around Comfy UI or solve something around Prim that would make it far easier for it to help other people solve those problems. But also we want it to have human language. The only reason these LLMs are intelligent, if we go back to or accurate or have high quality at all, is because they have high quality information feeding them that is being trained on. So we go back to our read on, you know, a very gentle introduction into large language models, is that these things are just guessing machines, right? For with the context of what you have given me, what is the likely answer for something that would just be generally posted online? And as I have heard said, which I just thought this was the perfect freaking analogy, is an AI being trained on the output of an AI or of itself is basically the LLM equivalent of inbreeding. So I think that last step is really important. Clean it up, make it not so cringy, make it your own, and then publish it. I promise you, it does not take that long. You've got a one pager. It took me maybe 5 minutes. And literally the one step that I haven't done is publish it. Let's pause right here and thank our amazing sponsor, CoinKite, the makers of the ColdCard hardware wallet. This is the way to keep your Bitcoin safe. If you think you have Bitcoin on an exchange, you don't own Bitcoin. What you own is a promise that somebody else will one day maybe pay you Bitcoin. I cannot tell you how many people have been burned because that promise was bullshit. When you have a hardware wallet, when you hold your own keys, not only do you 100% know that you are the owner of your Bitcoin, but you also separate those keys from the malware and backdoor-ridden devices like your phone or your computer. The internet is full of security holes. With the ColdCard hardware wallet, you literally get like CEO hardware security module level security that was unheard of at the consumer level just a few years ago. Prior to Bitcoin, the idea of getting an HSM setup like that level of security for under tens of thousands of dollars was absurd. There simply was no market for it. Post-Bitcoin, now we have things like the ColdCard, which is an extremely secure, air-gapped device that can generate and secure your Bitcoin keys so that you can sleep soundly at night knowing that your Bitcoin is yours and it is safe for the long term. Check them out and get 9% off with code Bitcoin Audible. That is the name of my other podcast, and you will find that discount link and code right there in the show notes. All right, so that's why I think this is going to be a utilizing AI tools, the major LLMs in these two ways to troubleshoot through issues that may not have, that just may have been a dead end prior, prior to having these tools, and then summarizing and breaking down exactly how you troubleshooted it, so you troubleshot it, so that you can publish it online and make this publicly available to other people. I mean, I think that's just going to, I mean, imagine all we have to do is go from 0.1% to 1% of those major problems being posted online and being summarized and put together with LLMs, and you have such an insane improvement in being able to source and figure out problems and solutions on in the massive collective database that is the internet in a way that I don't think any other tool, I can't imagine any other tool that could even come close to making it, to dropping the barrier that low. So number three is compositing imagery. So a lot of people, everybody knows that you can go up with DALL-E or Stable Diffusion or Midjourney or whatever, and you can generate your own image. That's cool. And honestly, I don't want to discount that. But a lot of people think that, oh, it's going to be the death of art and, you know, all of this stuff. And I genuinely think the exact opposite. What it is going to do is going to lower the cost of producing incredible art and engaging or seeing some artist's vision or some project that you want to see come to fruition at a tenth, a hundredth of the cost as it otherwise would have been. But it doesn't mean that the AI, that the image diffusion replaces your vision for it. I see it a lot that people just randomly generate an image, and that's great and everything, but you end up seeing a lot of similarities. There's just a lot of the same stuff coming through because the composition in a lot of these things end up mimicking each other because it really leans heavy towards, you know, center focus, you know, portrait type image and that sort of thing. But the thing is that you can composite these together. If you have basic knowledge of Photoshop, this is another one of the things, the little things, is that if you have basic knowledge of computers or like just extremely general knowledge of the terminal that you can just like kind of sort of navigate, you can absolutely do 10 or 100x what you could with ChatGPT by just having that little extra. It's like a boost. And the perfect example that I think I have for my own case is that I am not a developer, but I have developed tons of little apps and tons of little systems and scripts and all sorts of, just like I talked about with a desktop app, like a double click script for opening up Prim. It would be an incredibly difficult thing to Google my way through that, and it would take too long, so I would never do it. But now I just do these things regularly. Like on the daily, I'm coming up with some little trick like this, some little right-click service on my Mac, and we'll get back to that because that's actually one of the things I want to hit next. But compositing imagery is, in that same way, is if you have the basic tools for Photoshop, for Krita, for GIMP, any of these like things that you can composite and put together images, this is such a fantastic way to utilize the image generation to just put stuff together. You can literally imagine that you want to put together a room with a bunch of, like, you have a couch and you have a lamp and you have a desk and you have like the backdrop of the room itself. You take a picture of your room, it's empty, and you put these things together. Like you do those cookie cutouts with like magazines or whatever. And there's a lot of these apps actually that let you do this with like stuff that you find on Pinterest or Instagram. Well, if you actually just composite these things together in an insanely rough way, really quickly, you can use this in an image-to-image conversion and basically run this through a Stable Diffusion or a Midjourney or something like that. Give it the prompt of what you are seeing, of the couch, the color of the couch, the room, the general description. Like, just describe what you are seeing as you want it to be, and then give it the image to image, and it will use that as the base and do like a low noise setting. So this is something Like to understand how image diffusion works is basically just like how LLMs are trying to predict what word is next. Image diffusion is basically trying to predict what color pixel is next to what other color pixel. So if you give it 1,000 pictures of a cat, is what it does is it basically just starts from an enormous amount of just pure noise, just total randomness. And then, you know, if you look like you look at one of those like random a painting with just like random stuff on it, or you look at a cloud that doesn't look like anything in particular, and you can like kind of squint and you can start to see a shape that maybe you wanted to, or you can just look at random noise like fuzzy on an image on a TV or something, and maybe you can try to see the picture of a face. And this is sort of what image diffusion does, is it adds a ton of noise, and then in that noise it tries to say, well, these couple of pixels here kind of look like the connections of pixels that come with all the cat images that I've seen. And so it amplifies those and then deadens the ones that don't fit. And then slowly you start to see like the outline of a cat. And this is the sampling. So you'll see this as a common term is you have noise levels or denoising and like these sorts of things. And then you have sampling. Well, sampling is how many times is it going to look at that noise and try to pull an image out of it. So the higher sample rate, obviously, the more it's actually working, but the clearer and more explicit the image that you get out of it. And you'll see this if you just play around with it and you put it on like a sampling rate of like 2, you're not going to get much. But going back to the noise issue is that if you have like an image to image and you've just done like some cardboard cutouts of like a bunch of different pieces and kind of haphazardly stuck it into a living room, a picture of a living room, well, you can do an image to image and do like a 0.2 noise. And what it will do is it will only kind of like take away, it will only cover up like 20% of the image and then try to look for a couch and a lamp and the room that you gave it and the windows and the setting and the tree in the corner. And if you describe all of these things, it will just obviously see the ones that you put explicitly in the image as its reference. Because 80% of it is still just a picture of a tree and a picture of a couch and a picture of a lamp. But you know what happens? The edges go away. It sees a picture with all of those things, and your kind of dumb-looking rough composite now looks like a pristine image with those things in the setting. So going back to using AI to composite images and to generate some sort of vision that you have for an image, what I like to do is use Midjourney or Stable Diffusion, which Automatic 1111 and Comfy UI are my two favorite UIs right now. But I use these to iterate and come up with some ideas for how I want things to look. But literally, if you ever see me post an AI-generated image online, almost, I don't think even one, maybe one, two times tops, I've ever actually used the one that was generated specifically from Midjourney or from Stable Diffusion. Instead, what I've done is I've generated a background and I've used that as my base and I've upscaled it. Then I've generated a portrait image of a person, and then I've generated a far away image of that person, and then I've done a rough composite cut of the portrait on them to the upper half of their body, because the portrait version is going to get incredibly good detail. The far away one is going to have like a mushed up face that looks retarded. Then I have a bunch of icons saved and like just kind of like splash images from Envato Elements, where I have like just a smartphone. There's like a 3D thing of a smartphone. And so you can like spin it around and look at it from any angle you want. And then I take screenshots of it. Then I cut that out. And if I want a smartphone in the image, or I want someone with a hand holding the smartphone, I will literally just cut that out of some other image, stick it on the person that I'm using, and then have this composite of like 10 or 20 different image generated elements to get the composition that I'm looking for, to get the weight to the right third, or the distance or focus in the image that I'm trying to get, because I can't just get it out of a prompt. And then I just describe that, stick it into an image to image, and I put really low noise on it, you know, 0.1, 0.2, and let Stable Diffusion pull out what I was trying to do with my rough composition. It's insanely useful. It is able to create a bunch of, you know, extra detail and kind of vibrancy to the image that you know, would have taken me forever to try to piece together. But then I have a wholly unique image, and I have something that was literally my vision for what I was trying to create, but it didn't require me to be like doing expert painting. It just, I just needed to be able to, you know, cut some stuff out. I know the basics of layers in Photoshop or GIMP. And if you really want to like dive into this hard, Firefly, Adobe Firefly is the one that's like trying to integrate all of these AI tools at like a kind of breakneck pace. But I find just kind of putting together rough composites rather than actually having it in my image editor and then throwing it back and forth from automatic 1111 works fine, because Adobe loves to charge out the ass for everything that they do. So that's another really great use case. And as I shared in my transcribe video, the one where I made the little tool to automatically transcribe all of my podcasts and everything by just drag and drop, is it's also great for making icons. Making custom icons and, you know, little logos and things for the apps that I build. And so that brings me to number four. Automate everything. The beauty of being a developer, if you can like really like just bang out code, is that you can automate everything that you do. With LLMs, with ChatGPT, with Replit, with CodeGPT, like all these different like code specifically trained models. Everyone is a developer. I have tons of what I refer to as tiny apps or micro apps on my computer that are made to automate the way that I do things. I already gave a couple of different examples. I've got the video to show you how to do the drag and drop transcribe on the Mac. It uses Whisper, FFmpeg, which is a command line tool. And what else did it use? I don't know, a couple of different, like just simple tools that are available. Whisper's an open source AI for just speech to text. Then, like I said, prim.ai, and I've also got Stable Diffusion. Is automatic 1111 requires you to go into a terminal and say, I think it's like Python, or no, maybe it's a bash script. Yeah, so I think you have to navigate to your Stable Diffusion, your automatic 1111 folder, and then run the webui.sh script from that folder. And you know, I did that like 5 or 10 times or so, and I got sick of it. I was like, ah, this is like a headache, because I have to like CD to the thing and drag and drop. Like it's like a 7-step process or something like that. But it's enough. It's a barrier that it's annoying. And you know what I did? I was like, wait a second. I can just automate this. I just have it go to my Stable Diffusion folder. And because then after that, it gives you just an address, a 127, like a localhost address with a port number to view the UI in Stable Diffusion. And so I just made a simple app, a double click that just ran this bash script from the location of my Stable Diffusion, and then waited. It paused like 5 seconds and then opened up Chrome and went to the localhost with the port number, and then boot it up. So now I just double click. Now I just double click on an icon, a thing that I made, and I took the crappy, like outdated, like 90s version of the little emoji, fire emoji icon that they have on Stable Diffusion. If you go to Hugging Face, it's just like the like rough fire emoji. And so I took that as my image to image. I put it in Stable Diffusion and I just said fire emoji, elegant minimalist icon. Like I gave it just like a bunch of like, you know, this is awesome sort of vocabulary, and it made like a really cool ass icon for Stable Diffusion that I put on my little script, and now I can just double click and open it, and it's cool. I've got like a little Stable Diffusion flame. Again, using both the compositing method, using the image to image to take advantage of this content that is already out there. It's some base of the image to just upgrade the quality. Then cut it out, make it a PNG, paste it into, like, to make a custom icon for Stable Diffusion, and build the little script to, I mean, it took me no time at all. Like, it was not a difficult or lengthy process, and it was actually really fun. And I have done this with a ton of little things. Just looking at my doc right now, I've got one that is a wave grab, which will just take whatever audio that I'm working with, because I do a lot of media conversion. I mean, I have 2 podcasts and, you know, video and all sorts of stuff. WaveGrab will literally just pull a wave file out of either it will convert an MP3 to a WAV, and it will specifically have it in a bit rate that I need for regularly for a lot of different things that I do. AI is actually a very good example of it, because a lot of times you need it in a very explicit bit rate in order for it to even work. So what do? You automate the conversion of the bit rate. And then it also will do the same thing for video. So if I drop a video on it, like no matter what media file I give it, if it's got audio, it will just extract the audio, convert it to a WAV in the right bit rate, and then rename it with like, you know, dash audio or dash WAV. I can't remember exactly what my format is. And post it in the exact same folder, like right next to where the file that I just gave it. The other one was the Transcribe app, which you know. And if you haven't seen that video, definitely go check it out. I have the link in the show notes. And I am able to drag and drop any audio or video file into it. It will, again, convert to a WAV file that I need for Whisper. It will open up Whisper and feed it the audio file. And then it will spit out in the exact same name with dash transcribe and dash subtitle at the end of it. It will print out a transcription in text, and it will print out a subtitle file that I can then drop into any of my editors, like DaVinci Resolve or Final Cut, any of the video editors that I use. Another one is ZipDrop. This is one that I built that just does a compression. It zips my project files, and I do this instantly when I am done with a project. Like, I will do this as soon as I am done with this project. I will export the MP3, and then I will have the audio file to get this published. I will send it to my producer, and I will drag and drop the Logic file, which is the project file, which, if you just open it, it's basically like a folder with just like a million different things. And, you know, it might be a gig. Like, this episode is almost going on an hour. It's going to be over an hour, I can tell already. So I drag and drop this just right onto my dock with the zip drop. I'm a big fan of drag and drop. Drag and drop, everything should be interface drag and drop. But it will zip that file and then verify that the zip and the file are accurate, so that, you know, I'm certain not to lose any information. Then it will delete the original Logic file. And so a gig has now turned into 600 megabytes of a single block file, and I can immediately just archive this. And I have the exact same process that I have for archiving, which I do this more as a folder process, where what it will do is it will literally go through an entire folder, and it will zip every individual folder for each one of the episodes, and then automatically do all the verification, and then move the zipped version to my external drive, verify that that the entire file and the entire zip has moved to the new location in my archive folder, and then move all the old ones to the trash. And then I just kind of scan through, make sure everything showed up and all the data looks right. I'll unzip a random one just to make sure that everything's good. Then I'll empty my trash, and my entire thing will be archived, and I can just let it run for a couple of hours, and it will archive, you know, 2 months worth of work while I'm asleep. Another one that I've got is a Bitcoin Audible project. When I want to start a new project, I come down here and I click on it, and I've got it so that it will, because I do so many of these different processes, like when I start up a Bitcoin Audible episode, I have like 10 different things that I do that are the exact same thing for every single episode. And then I have templates. I have both a Logic project template, so like my audio recorder template, and then I have a notes template for how I'm putting together my ideas that I do over the period of a few days before I do the episode. And I have all of my relevant links within those notes to files on my computer. And then obviously I have my naming convention for all of my files and all of my episodes to make it consistent so that I can organize all my stuff. And it was really kind of all over the place until I strictly formalized this. And this is actually the last thing that I heavily use AI for, and a lot of these micro apps, is standardizing and formalizing all of these little things that I do. And more specifically, one of the things that I'm currently in the process of building, I'm trying to learn how to, the ins and outs of LangChain and Prim, which you will hear come up quite a bit, because Prim is an app that lets you host a ton of different models for a variety of things. Like, you can do speech to text, text to speech, you can do vector databases, you can do embeddings. You can do general LLMs. And what this will allow you to do, and what LangChain does in connecting these things together, is it allows you to do these things in series on a set of data, or with a, you know, with commands and, you know, variables that you place in that are outputs from another one. And so what I've done more recently is the short version of this, or the real quick version of this, are little light apps and right-click functions for naming things. So one of my big issues is I never had like a global, there's a great book called The Name of the Wind. And one of the things they have is in the, that fantasy book or whatever, is something called the archives, which is just a massive library. And one of the jokes or kind of like funny things about it is that there's like five different conventions for organizing and figuring out where everything is, because this thing is so huge. It's like a multi-lifetime project to actually organize it. And so none of the organizational projects ever finish, and some new person comes in convinced that they've got a better system and they start reorganizing it. So the entire thing is just utter disarray because there are multiple systems and none of them are actually complete. For the people who actually understand that reference, that's the way I like to describe the way my computers have been for a long time, is I'll come up with some system or naming convention, and then I'll never fully commit to it, or I'll never like go back into the archives, so to speak, and fix everything that I've done on my old naming convention. And then by the time I get around to maybe even doing that, I create a new one. I've figured out a different way to do it. Well, I am now 99.99% sure that AI is going to help me solve that problem. And one of the big things that I've noticed that's going to really help with this is just that the Apple AI, just the base thing that they have in their operating system now, vectorizes text in an image. And I'm not sure if you have noticed this, but it drives me crazy with like Spotify, or like if somebody sends me like an Instagram post, if you've ever noticed that you can't like click and highlight on things, especially on like mobile, it drives me mad that there is text right there in front of me and I cannot copy and paste it to search, or to copy and paste the link to go to the website that they're talking about, etc. So you know what I've gotten to do now is I screenshot the text and then pull up the photo, and then I can highlight the text. This is because of vector models that are just built into macOS now, or I guess iOS, all of the Apple operating systems. But I can now run my own models with Prim and a number of other tools, but I think Prim is going to be kind of the foundation of a lot of these things that I do. I can now do this so that I can actually get descriptions and tags for the content and text inside of an image. So what I'm working on right now, that I have like a really rough version of it, where I just kind of have standardized ways to name certain things, and I have a set of, like, I mean, literally like my memes, my project files, the way I save pictures, the way I save documents. I have like receipts and then charts and like a bunch of like data heavy imagery. And I will have a naming convention. I have little right click scripts that basically speed up the way that I do this naming convention. And it allows me to actually, since I can systematize this, it allows me to actually adhere to it for a far longer span, I guess. And then I can also write in that same script, again with the help of ChatGPT, easily make it so that it will also, when I label something a certain way, it will also move it to the explicit location that I keep those things. So that I can, what I essentially am able to do is I can dump things onto my desktop or onto my download folder, and then randomly just kind of go through and then right-click label, right-click label, right-click label. And then it will tag the relevant files with what sort of file that they are, and then move them to the right location. Right now, it's a lot more involved because there's a lot of manual parts to this, but I'm trying to build a workflow with LangChain, which is, it's still new to me, but the beautiful thing is I can use ChatGPT to kind of walk me through it and feed it all the docs. But I want to have a way to have kind of those built-in naming conventions, or like set tags for, or labels for certain types of content, and then otherwise just name the file essentially a handful of tags of what is in the file. Like, what is the image? What is the chart of? That sort of thing. And I can use AI models to pull that information out of it, and then an LLM to basically summarize it and put it in the format of a file name, and have a simple script to do it in some specific type of way, or just in my specific naming convention, and then organize those files where they need to go. And then I want to be able to do this so I can just do it to an entire folder. And here's the thing, is that even if it's like slightly inaccurate or it doesn't quite put things in exactly the right category, here's the funny thing, is that that already happens an absolute ton of times, and most of it doesn't even get organized because I don't have the time to go through. I end up saving more stuff than I can ever actually go through and organize. And so I'm in the process of building this system out with organizing my files, images, memes, documents, receipts, spreadsheets, you know, all that good stuff. And then also I want to build this same thing out for my Obsidian notes, the notes that I use to organize my thoughts and my episodes and my projects and all the things that I do. And these have been all of the major ways that I have used AI. And I mean that specifically, not just that these are the most productive ways that I use it, but that these, I do this all the time. Like every single day, I use it for one or some of this list of five things. And it has genuinely made a massive difference in both how easy it is for me to find the information that I'm looking for, and then also in basically pumping through a lot of this stuff so I can kind of focus on the content and I can focus on the tools and everything that I'm trying to explore rather than the actual doing of the content creation. A great example is the tutorials that I use as number two, is I want to make it so that as I start to piece these things together, I can literally use the process of discovery as the mechanism for creating the content I need around it that is going to be beneficial to other people. And so I list these out because I think these are incredibly important ways to just think about how these tools are available. And again, you don't have to run your own. Like, ChatGPT is good for a lot of these things. I still highly recommend Stable Diffusion, but if you don't have the computer for it and you don't have a GPU, Midjourney is a great one. And neither of those things are expensive at all if you want to work them into your workflow, until we get to the point that the self-hosted ones are efficient enough and we have hardware that like makes an order of magnitude improvement. And I really think we're going to be able to do this on consumer, like genuine consumer hardware. We are going to be able to run very, very high quality models. So if you aren't using a lot of these tools in this way, I highly suggest you start digging into it. These will make huge productivity changes in how you do things. And then subscribe to this show and watch the YouTube and the Rumble as I break down how I do a lot of these different tools. And I'm going to have, even though Nodeless is now down, sad days, I salute thee. Very sad that we lost Nodeless, because that was what I was setting up my paywalls on. And maybe I'll just have these available for free. Probably for fun and just to get you guys to explore and use the Lightning Network, I'll probably put it behind a really small SAT paywall just because I think you guys should be using Lightning, because I think this is actually going to be a critical piece of the future. And if you aren't into Bitcoin already, or if you're into Bitcoin and you haven't used Lightning, well, I'm going to make you use it. But all of these projects, I'll try to go through and show you how to use these on your own system and make them a little bit cleaner so that you can customize them more directly and hopefully have these all available for you guys. And we will be digging into all of them on this show, right here on AI Unchained. A huge thank you to everyone for subscribing, for listening, and for sharing this out to anybody you know who could benefit from these, from using these tools. And a huge thank you to CoinKite as well for supporting this show and for making the Bitcoin hardware wallet so that my Bitcoin is safe and I can sleep like a baby at night. You know, I don't understand that phrase. I don't understand that idiom, because Rad sleeps not at all consistently. He's waking up all the time and he's fussy when he wakes up because he wants to be asleep. So no, you won't sleep like a baby. You will sleep like someone who sleeps really, really well, soundly, and comfortably. Don't forget the discount and the links right there in the show notes. With that, guys, I hope you got something really useful out of this episode, and we will have much more specifics in breaking these things down in video for tutorial versions so that you can use them more directly as well, exactly the ways that I am using them. So keep an ear out and an eye out for those things, and I'll see you next Thursday right here on AI Unchained. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys.